3 to 14. And the time is 8 a.m. in the Betty Davis Committee Room in the Alaska State Capitol. We do, we are gathered. Members present, we are Councilor Victoria Drummond, Representative Mayor Hopkins, Representative Tiffany Zolkowski, Representative Ron Young, Representative Mike Brooks, and Representative Mike Hunk, and myself, Representative Andy Story. We have a forum to conduct business. I'd like to first recognize our incoming Secretary Chris Dillon and Illinois moderator Cassie Becker. Thank you for helping us out today. But before we begin, just a reminder to silence our cell phones, and if you're online, mute your microphones. Remember to manually unmute your microphone to speak, and return to mute when done to keep the background background sound from within. And today, we are fortunate to host the first of two panel discussions with school district leaders, with the goal of gaining insights into current operations, student needs, financing, and perspectives as we look ahead to this next school year. We will hear from three superintendents today: Dr. Dana Bishop with the Amherst School District, Kimberly Haynes with the Lower Crescent Queens School District, and Tom Newell with the Alaska City School District. Our Council on Hearing Committee will have to switch gears and take up House Bill 25, Social Emotional Learning. The amendment deadline was previously set for yesterday, April 13th, at noon, and no amendments were received. We will not consider House Bill 19 fully to teaching as certificate today. Instead, we added it to our Friday schedule. Let's move now to our panel discussion and briefings for our testimony. And the Alaska City School Leaders. We have asked each superintendent to address four broad topics and questions in a panel format. I sent a sample questions to the panelists for preparation to give us a framework for today. I think all members have a copy of that. I hope that that will give us a chance also to ask questions and get a better sense of what's happening in our schools. And yes, once the corporate works the clock, to try and restore our time to cover all topics, but I'd like to be sure that we have time for questions and dialogue with our program members' minds, too. I'd like to update to the panel members, so we have some areas in order. Before we begin, does any committee member have questions? Seeing none, let's start with a status report on school operations and instruction. I'd like to begin with Dr. Bishop. Welcome. I believe one of the first topics you said was offering initiatives and tell us about the record and talk about a little bit what a school day economy looks like for students in the Anchorage schools.
Okay. My name is Dana Bishop, Superintendent of the Anchorage School District. I appreciate the time today. I do want to say that Anchorage School opened on January 19th for elementary students in our elementary schools, and then May after spring break on March 15th for secondary schools. Continuing that, approximately 85% of our elementary parents that are enrolled with children decided to go back to face-to-face learning. The rest chose an online option. At the secondary level, it's about 70%, which is for both middle school 679 and then, of course, high school 71 work with the secondary. About 70% of those students chose to enroll back in the school. It does look quite different. We're utilizing the CDC recommendations of cohorting students. And so the recesses and other things are really about full school, going outside of recess at the same time. We're utilizing just mitigation techniques for the elementary within the school. It has been successful. It is a lot of work, I'm going to show that, not only for teachers in the classrooms, for administrators, but for everyone for startup quite a lot. So when they had over 1,000 students enter into private education. So hopefully that is just a quick brief about the picture of the day for you in the April semester. Thank you.
Distributing the vaccine throughout our region. So we're seeing lower case counts.
section heavily in literacy and math, and then with a strong emphasis on credit attainment and credit recovery at the high school level. Of course, like Dr. Mishra has said, we have strong mitigation measures in place on math that are required of students and staff. We are right now requiring social distance at 6 feet, practicing excellent hand hygiene, sanitation of our buildings has been strengthened. Of course, the biometric testing is in place. We are using the cohort model, so our students are back on that hybrid and in cohorts. So the cohort sits together all day in their classroom, and they do eat lunch in the classroom, and they do have a break or recess break, but it is with their cohort. We really are trying to limit that interaction between cohorts in case they do need to find contact with. In terms of the percentage of students who return to in-person learning, so as I said, we do have 5 schools that are currently still in remote, but of those that have opened, roughly 90% of pre-K through 6 have returned. We've made, like I said, real progress as a region over the past few months. And I am very hopeful that we will be able to return to full in-person learning come August. We did see a decrease in our enrollment this year, not as substantial as a Crystal District. We have 47 students. Some families opting to move to neighboring districts, some moving out of the region, and then some opting to enroll in a full-time homeschool program. In that case, I do view this change in enrollment as a short-term trend related to the pandemic.
Thank you for that. I have a couple of questions. I also wanted to highlight the recent data on the loss of your 2 employees and how that really impacts our communities. A couple of things was what does your working model look like? And those 47 students, what was the percentage of that?
Pilot model, so group A comes to school on Mondays and Tuesdays, and then is in remote on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And group A comes Thursday and Friday, and then is remote Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Our total student enrollment covers around 4,000 students, so 47 is not that big of a number given our total student enrollment.
Thank you for that. Any other questions
about our prompts? Thank you, Dr. Stewart. You mentioned that you're in the high-risk area. Do you have your own, or are you following somebody else's evaluation of the risk? Is that just everybody's neighbors or public school? How do you come up with that?
Yes, thank you for that question, Representative Parker. We work closely with my PhD, and they have developed guidelines for the region's school districts that are in alignment with CDC guidance for operational zones. So currently, we do remain at that red or high risk level.
Is that published?
Yes, it is published by IPHC and then also posted on our school district website. Really, it is a lot of our CARES funds is an in-tramac system. And it has been, actually has worked as complications, and it's really kind of, I think of it as a giant band-aid on the larger issue of access to the internet. So our in-tramac system has allowed students to access the learning management system, access our tool, and then working with Zoom, we have been able to have students connect with Zoom to their teachers using that intranet, but they do not have access to the internet through that system. So for us, we haven't been able to offer our students access to a variety of online programs because that access is limited. So our teachers have produced lessons, videos, and then they upload those to the intranet, and then students, when they're remote, can access that system from home. This really was a huge effort. It took us about 5 months to get it up and running. It required the district to purchase from folks here in Buffalo modem for every family, and then at our village sites, a router and an antenna, and then we provided instructions to families for how to install those and then get the system up and running. Of course, we also had to make sure that every student had access to a device in order to access the intranet. So that was our solution this year, and that is something that we will keep in place moving forward. It has brought added value to what we're able to do during this time, and we see that we can continue to leverage that into the future.
Able
client type that's forward, which enables instead of intercepting a call individual students, providing the instruction throughout the day, grabs the students and calls and access their teacher to do it, just like we're doing here today on this call. They can have conversations over the phone calls.
I guess I have the same sort of question that you want to ask the school district. Are you working with a local organization to develop your risk criteria, risk level criteria? Is that developed for your community, or are you adopting something that was published by the state or the federal government?
Yeah.
criteria available on the internet that somebody else might have looked at it? And,
to be honest with you, really not necessarily. I need to get it up on our website, and our Facebook page, but so please keep an eye on the writer. And also, I guess, one of the last decisions to take that to me is to go around and communicate and email with our parents and get this information out. But I should make it publicly available so that folks can look at it.
Yes, if I can, I can send that to
provide specific targeted instruction, literacy and math
and then support for accreditation and credit recovery at the high school level. And then additionally, continue to support for our pre-K programs. Socially, we need to make sure we're providing as much mental health support as we can. We are concerned about the impact of COVID on our students' mental health, and we have been throughout the pandemic, in particular to related to depression. We are fortunate as a district to staff both itinerant social workers and counselors. However, their travel this year has been severely limited due to the pandemic and mandates for villages for travel. So a lot of their connections this year to date have been with students via Zoom or by phone. We have opened up recently to itinerant travel to those communities that are permitting it. So it has been really good to start seeing those students face to face and to be able to provide that essential service to them. Culturally, one of the positives to come out of this whole experience, we've had a lot of reports from students and families that remote learning provided families more time to be together and to practice distance activities. And so we want to make sure moving forward that we continue to support and provide opportunities to integrate culture into the classroom. We already have done tremendous work over the past decade offering place-based, culturally relevant curriculum. So we want to make sure that we continue that effort. And I think other items, we just want to make sure as students return that we're supporting them in being back in school in any way we can. A lot of students come back for the first time, that's just continuing to provide support with how school looks different. For some of our students, they've been out of back to school 6 months or more in some of our communities. And so, learning the new systems that are in place and supporting them in that has been really important. And then we need to continue to support our remote learners for those families who are opting for full-time remote and for students on hybrid more than remote for 3 days a week. So those are some of the things that come to mind.
As we close out this pandemic year.
I think very similar to what Superintendent Bank just mentioned. Academically, it might be very
is. But even those people say, oh, it's not going to cure. Really, I just need to tell you, see.
You can let your representative say,
increased, I'll get that exact same CARES money left then, there was a similar amount provided for child nutrition around the state. I want to say it was about $40 million around the state. I'm assuming that Anchorage got its usual robust share of that, of those dollars, and this is what you're applying in child nutrition services.
Thank you, Representative Clements. We can receive and probably arrive at that. That's pretty tricky because there's different laws for different monies. And so the school lunch program was based rather on providing school lunches, so it's a little bit different. But I know that through the city, the assembly awarded an additional $400 per child to the families.
Great, thank you very much. Thank you.
current program, city girls, Saturday program, and we're also looking at additional instructional materials that would help with some of that learning and recovery.
Thank you for that question. I do want to share that prior to anybody being received, I'm PGR anchored experiences about an $11 to $14 million shortfall from the previous year in a pro forma based budget. That might have some effect to you, but it's about 2% of our operational budget, which is in line with the CPO, just a natural increase in the cost of doing business. As you know, you're familiar, about 90%, 92% in impact of our funds are for supportive employees. And both revenue CBAs, our contracts, our collective bargaining contracts, and agreements, we have natural progression that are about very similar to the state workers, very similar to municipality workers, that's the victory of government jobs. And so that explains a little bit about how that is experienced. Again, step back and I'm knowing it's about 2 to 3% over there since I've been here. This year we did utilize, coming into the new year, the CARES Act to support computers and infrastructure and different items to be able to have school PPE, especially testing is a major component of our PPE funds, or rather our additional CARES money funds. So, in the beginning, we didn't know, of course, a lot about that this is going to be the roadmap gas money, debt support us, and that additional recovery money is still to be spent, but utilizing a large portion of that unfinished money that we talked about.
Thank you. If we're talking about looking at the housing market and who's leaving, some of the students are coming back. What percentage you're anticipating students coming back for next year? Trying to get that number. Do you kind of have a percent estimation of how many students are expected to come back as you're creating that budget now?
We looked at, and we're doing a student survey now in April. We might need to update our student enrollment. But we are estimating that of the 4,000 that left us, about 75% will return. A lot of those are both at Charles Graduate Schools, and what we're understanding, they didn't want to leave this year, some of that just in the next year because if they would have left, they wanted to have that difficult work conditions. You know, they needed a place for the job to actually go. And but that the cost of that school was inhibited by discontinuing. And so it's not a lack of the program being excellent. And that's why I don't believe that a lot of our students are not going to come back, because we certainly have some excellent options in our state. Of course, Boston wants to be the best option for our families and English. But many of them found that some of the online programs around the state met their needs with those family situations at work. And so for me, I'm a highly competitive person, but I have families first. And so 75% of the 4,000 we believe will enter back through the holidays of our schools.
Dr. Bishop, I really appreciate your perspective on unfinished learning as opposed to learning recovery where learning hasn't really happened yet. That's a really positive way to look at the needs of your students and working on getting them keeping them engaged. I really appreciate your work. I actually wanted to ask both of your superintendents, you have a really good answer to my question in terms of the social distancing in classrooms of 6 to 10 feet. I think I heard Superintendent Harbaugh saying, I think Jessa or Regina or Dr. Quinn apologized for not remembering. How do you have essentially reduced class size, but I'm assuming that because you have separate sections of the day with different groups of kids, the same teacher is teaching all of these students, but spread out over the day into different groups. I know it's not possible to build additional classrooms in this kind of atmosphere, so increasing social distancing means fewer students in the classroom with each teacher. So it's contributing to a natural lowering of class size, which we all know is better. It's better for students, but how that ends up being a strain on the teacher having to teach the same subject twice. I'm trying to figure out how that works as you're talking about. I appreciate it.
Sure, Jenny, I will start. ASD, I just wanted to make sure that I used the 3 foot distance, 3 to 6, that was originally in the CDC guidelines, and that has come out and been revised again. This 3 foot being asked is okay. ASD has utilized additional classrooms, and what we've done is we've included our specialist teachers, many who have a degree, and this is really an elementary school, who have a teaching degree, but also like a specialization. So whether they're coaching or doing others, we've actually created additional classes. And in ASC, we have many of our schools additional space that hopefully one day can be preschool classrooms. But we were able to utilize gyms and other areas rather than the school to spread out if we put it in a teacher. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Bishop. I move on to Superintendent Lincoln. And the school district and financial
Thank you, Commissioner Sorry. Commissioner Kutcher TV, Commissioner, to answer your question really quickly, we are continuing with 6 feet in social distance in our KSD. We did view the updated CDC guidelines for 3 feet and conference with WACHC. And because we still are technically at high risk level and seeing an alarming level of cases, so we are continuing with that 6 feet. This works for now because of our cohort model with students coming in person those 2 days a week. We are hopeful though, as we look to next fall with the continuation of the vaccine and the availability of the vaccine for 12 to 15 year olds, that we will see continued progress in lowering of case rates and be able to move to that 3 feet. As Dr. Bishop stated, we also have utilized other spaces in schools for instructional space, such as our gyms and cafeterias. Really, any spaces where we can look to work with our classroom aides to provide small group instruction, we are utilizing. In terms of finances, we are doing okay. We are able to work with what we have. Certainly, crowdfunding results in the district having to cut costs every year in order to absorb increased costs and wages and benefits and insurance. So we do work to find savings to balance our budget, and then we continually work to find savings in general because we always face an increase in some unanticipated costs. In terms of our loss of 47 students, we are able to absorb that primarily this year by looking at department cuts at the district office level. We are very thankful for the CARES funding and after funding. We utilized CARES funding primarily for technology. Again, to put into place our intranet system for PPE. So we did try to amass a large quantity of PPE at the district level, and then we also provided sites and allocation of those funds to order additional supplies that are site-specific to meet their needs. We increased hours for our custodians district-wide, utilizing those funds in order to meet the needs for increased cleaning at the schools and sanitation. Then also, along with the internet, we have utilized those CARES funds and the CASR 2 funds for those routine costs, service fees, maintenance costs through DCI. For SR 2, we have put money into the summer school and extended day programs. So we are offering extended day programs currently at sites. Some of our sites are offering Saturday school. This is occurring at most of our sites where in-person learning is happening. And will continue well into the future. We are also utilizing funds to make sure we can offer, continue to offer over the summer credit recovery opportunities for students, and then also a robust summer school program focused on that specific targeted small group instruction in literacy, math, K-8, and then credit recovery and credit attainment at high school level. At LPSD, one of the challenges we face every year in regards to offering summer programs is staffing. A lot of our certified staff is from Athens region, and so the tendency is that they leave for the summer. And so one thing we are making sure of to do for this summer is to utilize our video teleconferencing system that we already have in place. We offer a very robust VTC course offering at LPSD. We staff 6 full-time district-wide high school teachers who are housed here in Bethel, and then they broadcast classes district-wide by students that we have in our district office. So we'll be looking to utilize that structure this summer, especially in those sites where we might not have a certified staff on site. We might be relying on our support staff who can can be there in person to provide that one-on-one support to students while they receive a BTC course. For ESSER 2, we have also invested in air purification systems. Recently purchased one for every classroom with HEPA filters. We did our initial review of all of our air purification systems last spring after the initial closure happened, and addressed preschools that needed some assistance then. But we want to take this extra step forward as we continue to welcome our students back. We'll need to continue for the next several years to provide that tech support for our internet system. We anticipate, of course, needing to continue to provide PPE for our sites, increased hours for staff, specifically our custodians. We are looking to expand our bus fleet. We do have fairly new buses in LKSD, but we don't have a lot, and if we're looking at social distancing, continuing on our buses when we bring all of our students back, we're going to need additional buses in order to make that happen, as well as drivers. And then again, I anticipate utilizing these funds for several years for summer school and extended day learning opportunities for students.
That's a great question, and learning online at home hasn't always been joyful for many. We've learned a lot of benefits that it's provided us in access for students, as well as utilizing the systems to support teachers to understand the next learning that students need or targeted learning at.
Continue with remote learning in some fashion. So we want to make sure that the intranet system continues on. We also, as I said, have a very robust distance delivery program. So we want to make sure we continue to strengthen our course offerings. We really do find that we're able to reach a lot of students in that way. And one of the things we always struggle with in rural Alaska is teacher recruitment and retention. This year in particular, we are seeing an incredibly high number or high rate of turnover. And so that distance delivery system is really essential for us in order to provide a highly qualified teacher to instruct students, particularly in villages where we have positions that remain unfilled throughout the school year. Of course, we're going to continue with our efforts to really assess and address, as Dr. Bishop said, unfinished learning. So we feel that, you know, it's an urgency there, of course, following the pandemic. And then looking at picking up what we're offering at the end of the day, it's the new year. So I think also one thing that we will really want to take a look at is just to make sure we have adequate mental health supports for our students. Our students already suffer from childhood trauma and ACEs, and now we're layering on pandemic-related issues or traumas. So we want to make sure that we have enough staff, that we're well staffed to meet the needs there. We also will make sure that we continue to provide adequate professional development for our teachers, so that they continue to be able to provide the best learning opportunities for our students. And lastly, I think, you know, technology is key. And I spoke earlier about lack of access to internet. But I think we'll continue to be innovative in how we approach meeting the needs of our students, certainly with our internet system, and just making sure that we continue to provide our students with devices.
Thank you.
three or more superintendents today. You know, what has struck me, and I appreciate the variety of communities with which our superintendents are representing today. I think what it is underscored for me is that not all communities, not all schools start at the same starting line with respect to the type of resources and opportunities that are made available to our students in a variety of areas. I would be interested in hearing briefly, with respect to this particular question, you know, we've talked about systemic issues within the particular schools, but what might be, in looking back at this year, some institutional or systemic challenges within your communities, within your regions, that have impeded your delivery of quality education in a pandemic year? So I'm seeing looking internally to the institution or systemic improvements that you are going to employ. I'd be interested in hearing what are some of the external systemic challenges that you have identified as needing to overcome moving beyond this year.
So if I can, why don't you start with that and we'll go to Superintendent Hankins.
Resulted in us changing our professional development structure down to
start of our school year. But with that said, that has also resulted in what I think are great partnerships, and that is something that, looking forward to post-pandemic school operations, that's something I think we want to continue to maintain, wasn't necessarily answering questions before. So I think our work with our tribes has definitely been a great outcome of this. And it has been challenging to navigate those mandates, if there is a case in a community, often the community shuts down, goes into a lockdown, and then our school goes to remote. I certainly understand why. We're lost in a lot of our families live in multi-generational homes. Access to health care is very limited. And so I certainly understand the precaution that has taken place this year. I also think that, another thing that has come out of this year is just partnership in the region. So at first I think it was challenging in our region is comprised of about 6 school districts, and so you kind of stay abreast of what everybody's doing, and my kids did a fantastic job for bringing us all together for regular meetings, and so we can all kind of be on the same page and be receiving the same information. And I think that also, that partnership is something that we want to continue as a result. Thank you.
Thank you. That's our story. And I'll just go back, right? From the side of the systemic issues outside of school, I would just say access to health care. LSD set up the first mass vaccination clinic in the state, and we did this, not with any funds, just internally knowing that we could get to teachers, that we could get to the 65 and all that. And it was really bad that we noticed it. But of course, 65 and all that have Medicare, but the access is more than just the availability of the health care. It's knowing the systems to access it, and certainly signing up for a vaccine, and just learning about our community. We've probably given over 30,000 vaccines now, and families, and so just some of the adjustments we've made in understanding our community. When we get a case in a school, we ask the whole family to come, and we will vaccinate everyone in that home. And we have a diet from our schools, and 19 family members show up with the same home with the second grader. And so our families, our community, and access, and more than just provided that cultural capital, if you want to understand that, the manner in which systems work was probably the biggest insight through this pandemic that we learned as a school system. So we're going to adjust our work to support families and students, because we know that healthy families and healthy kids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This question is for Superintendent Aikens. You brought up something earlier, and in August of 2019, my buddy and I were sitting in Bethel Airport. We were trying to get to St. Mary's. Weather was horrible. We're both retired teachers, and so we kind of started playing a game of picking who was the new teachers going out to the village, and we were 100% correct. And what was interesting is, pretty much nobody was going to fly out that day. And so we just sat down and started talking to them. And for the most part, just talking to them and asking, it just didn't seem like they had a real reality of what they were actually getting into. I grew up in rural Alaska, and my buddy worked in different rural places. And there was only people that were ready to turn around and also just talk about the increase and leave. So what are, I know you're the only super remote district. We have a remote district, but ours does have a role to it. So it's a little simpler if you want to leave and you're going to be very clean. So what is your, I guess, selling point? I was really anxious. What is your selling point in teaching? And almost everyone of these teachers were young females. So that, you know, what is your selling point? I'm just curious. But it's really interesting talking to you. You know, we encourage them to just, you know, treat it as an adventure. You know, you're going to go somewhere that you've never to be. Or it's not anything like what you can expect. So I'm really interested in that. Thank you.
Yes, kind of project and representative quantum is a great question. We often in real life we find ourselves at the corner of the light of something we don't want to try to do in another society comment. Say probably to you specifically, you know, we really start to provide excellent professional development to our teachers, and we really work to and have for 15 years now to implement a term dual language enrichment model program in almost 20 of our schools. We are a district that wants an outcome of bilingualism and literacy. We strive for that. We have done a lot of work with voice-based curriculum and really making sure that learning is meaningful and culturally relevant. And those are things that we are at length with our new teachers. We also provide for the opportunity for our new staff to participate in culture kits the summer prior to arriving in the district. And then we provide additional professional development support for our first and second year teachers. A lot of that geared toward learning about the culture. We encourage people when they do get to our sites to get involved. Really, teaching in rural Alaska, a lot of it is what you make of it. And being involved in the local community is very meaningful and enriches the experience. So those are some of the things I have to share. And I also wanted to note, just circling back to a question previously. I mentioned that we're thankful for our federal partnerships and our partnership with YKHC, but I also wanted to say that throughout this pandemic and this entire experience, the ASA ongoing collaboration meetings, the Superintendent's Association meeting, Superintendent's Association has been incredibly helpful, so I just wanted to say that as well. Especially as a new superintendent, I have found that without those that opportunity to collaborate and meet with my colleagues regularly. I wouldn't be able to do this job at home, so I'm going to say thank you.
Thank you. And we really want to thank all three of you for giving us some insights into what's really happening in our different schools across the state. It's really important and valuable for us to get a real clear picture of the things that are happening. And we really want to know how we can complement your work. And I did have a question about what actions you recommend the legislature take to support programs to make learning a success. And if you can send those comments to me, I will pass them up to the members here because we sure want to be aware of your thoughts on that. So we thank you greatly for your time out of your busy schedules. And we're really grateful for your leadership and for your partnership with families and supporting also our teachers, all the teachers who have put together within their communities. It's really incredible, and we can only imagine the great amount of work and learning that you have had to utilize this year. So my sincere gratitude for all of you. I think Representative Gillen has a comment.
Thank you. The only question I have is, can we get your contact information?
Excellent. Thank you. Let's do that. Let's do that with the committee. So, thank you very much. It's now 9:38. And we will turn to question 25, social emotional learning. As mentioned earlier, we did not receive any messages, but we launched our live on Tuesday, April 13th.
your objectives.
Thank you very much for having me on, Co-Chair. So the time we have to the presentation from the various superintendents, each one of them talked about the needs for addressing students' social and emotional concerns and impacts from the last 12 months. Looking at every single one of them hit on what they're worried about right now and moving forward. So this legislation, social and emotional impact, creates guidelines to help those teachers implement new programs or expand what they're already doing in a way that would make sure that they look for harassment, good for their students, and know what they're looking for, because a lot of these programs and efforts and practices in the classroom are going to have to be implemented quickly, but also over the next 2 years, as you can see, new American Rescue Package Plan, American Rescue Plan funds are going to be available over the next 2 years. So, things like the coping skills that they'll need to overcome obstacles over the last 12 months and things that they also will be running into in the classroom at the very beginning, teaching those skills, teaching resiliency to be able to motivate themselves every morning and throughout the day, also self-restraint and understand what sort of things they should not be doing, whether it's in the classroom or in the everyday life, how to cooperate, how to overcome those obstacles. Adverse childhood experiences that we hear from the LPS to supervision and also meeting obstacles in their way, interacting with other people, running into their problems and their heart questions within that path, and how to set goals, to achieve those goals, how to have pride in work, how to identify and address your emotions for a situation, to identify yourself how you are reacting to a situation, and also how to understand how others are reacting to you. As we talked about during the bill package hearing, this is what an engineer wants, this is what employers are looking for and skills these days. This legislation does not create any mandates, as we went over before. Districts, even while they are doing many of these efforts already, still want these standards in place, and they look for new ways to improve their students' learning opportunities, both at home and in their lives. Social and emotional skills are one-third of the education challenge that the WD administration has been working under for the previous 3 years, and for 1 year before that, after the education challenge. And so we know that it's critical for our students' ability to learn successfully. We heard from the department that professional development for educators, this is the number one requested class or topic, rather, for educators and educators that run on professional development, and these standards will also help districts do that at a more globally relevant style and implementation. That includes working with families to help understand what those families need at home, what they're teaching those students, what they can learn to do, to supplement and support what those families are teaching at home. Again, this is what educators want. This is what you heard from the district want. This is what the department is working towards. And for parents, the same colleagues and parents of the Federal School District during that public testimony to the school board during the closure, saying my students are having a social emotional well-being impact by having the school closures occur in that district. And so, this is needed across the state. It's clear that it's wanted, and this creates no mandates. The fiscal note is very small, so if you implement these standards, obviously that will be funding. But fortunately, the American Rescue Plan will be supporting large executive members, hiring counselors, as they discussed. One section here has school districts must return at least 20% of the funds that they receive for implementation of evidence-based interventions that ensure that those interventions respond to student social, emotional, academic, and academic needs and address the disproportionate impact of COVID-19 on underrepresented student groups. Now this is needed, and I appreciate your support as we move forward today. Thank you,
Roger. Thank you. It's much more important to develop these standards
Thank you.
learning opportunities and having a deliberate effort. You know, when I went to work for Alaska, I worked there for more than 30 years, but initially it was in the late 70s, and there was definitely a different culture. And we went through a change, which was very changed, but initially it was just learning opportunities. And we went through that people were more resilient, it seemed to me. You dealt with stuff and you overcame those challenges as it came up. But when it was started to be a deliberate effort, people didn't develop the personal relationships with. I felt, I guess, the reality is just sanitized. It was just less enjoyable. We were more apprehensive and afraid of each other. And that is able to respond to the little challenges. I think making an effort to change culture too rapidly and fashion it from the top down is just simply a wrong approach. And then I also noticed from the testimony you've received, the school districts, the Madison School District has a very formal curriculum already established, and the districts have established some one version of this from other members of the districts. I didn't sense, we didn't hear specifically from the Affiliate First Referral School District, that I hadn't had time to talk to the administration to see specifically what's going on, but from the educators that talked to in the Freedom's First Referral, my friends who are teachers, these things are being implemented without a top-down direction. And I think we would be much better off in the long run if we just let this continue to develop organically rather than trying to impose something from a top-down. And it was mentioned that this isn't a requirement, but it is. It becomes a requirement. We saw that what's going on in COVID. Everybody, the CDC has not mandated anything. The state has not mandated anything as far as how to respond to this COVID pandemic. And yet, when we heard from municipalities, we heard from the superintendents, they referred to their following the guidelines. It's an implicit mandate. Businesses are doing certain things because if they don't, they will be liable because there is this, what's labeled a guideline. Effectively, it becomes a mandate. You know, what do you think that the top-down approach is not an overall benefit to the society? We should just let it develop organically, and we should not engage further in this process on the state level. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. I should have a vote from Dowski. Tonight, I will be participating as the Hope 25 in the different committee. I appreciate the sponsor, bringing it forward, and find it to be timely as well as age appropriate. And consider as well the diversity of environments outside of the classroom that our students come from. That we heard from with respect to our presentation from the various school districts this morning. With respect to my colleague from our school, I believe that this is a far cry different from as long as I've been doing work. I would also say that as long as my colleague, his family was impacted greatly by colonization, then here in Alaska, I recall stories of my father being told to him because of our language in a classroom setting. I take umbrage with the fact that this is being classified as imposing any sort of cultural changes. In fact, this looks to develop a set of skills for students to utilize throughout the course of their lives, whether it be interpersonal skills, decision making, establishing healthy relationships, self-awareness, emotional management, all of that content has been provided to the sponsor. As it relates to this bill being before us, I believe that there are resources that can be provided by schools that can help provide knowledge for students to learn how to navigate life, and that is simply what they're trying to do, and I mean, think it's inaccurate to classify it as some sort of cultural integration from the top down, and appreciate the opportunity for us to provide additional resources, as we heard the sponsor say in his commentary this morning. We heard it from our superintendents who noted that they have one superintendent for 400 students. I believe that there was a previous presentation that we had on ACES where you could just indicated that they had one school counselor for 1,500 students. And so the need in Alaska is great. In health and social services, we see where there's a big gap in behavioral health support that we have at the state level. I believe that investing in resources that can provide tools as a sort of prevention is going to save money. In recent years, the background and training, Alaskans are going to be in most need of critical behavioral health crisis resources, or even correctional resources. And again, I appreciate the opportunity to support this legislation and to support our school districts and support Alaska families.
Any other comments?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm struggling with this. enormous emails against this, and the number one thing we're talking about social emotional answer the pandemic. The number one thing we can do is get our kids back in school. If they need to be around other kids, they need to run this question last month and be back on normal. Like, that's going to be the number one thing of healthy kids. The other thing is really important in the future, serving our school board, is I'm 100% in listening to the local needs. And I think, like my fellow board members, this is a top-down thing. I have tried to fight everything that's forced from the top-down. And I told the support every school district locally to get buy-in with the priorities of what they want to do when it comes to this. And so I'm going to oppose this because I do believe the school districts in those communities, I know the school districts should be the ones making these decisions, not the state, setting standards, and then move forward. And once those standards are in place, as I well know as a teacher, it's going to be used. So I'm a firm believer in having that local control and not just going to blank a statement that everybody agrees. Different communities, different villages have different beliefs. I believe in working with the entities within the school district to develop these sorts of plans. And I know school districts do have these plans, and I'm always going back to if it's not broken, why are we fixing it? They already have some curriculum in place that they spent time on. So, again, this one's a tough one for me, but I'm a firm believer in the districts making those choices. And so, I'm going to propose it based on that. Thank you.
Anyone else like to comment? I'm going to leave this for last week. We can follow our comments from the community comment. Anyone else have comments? I'll just make a few comments. I appreciate hearing what everyone is thinking. I understand that we have masks, and in order to learn to do the required math, you really have to be able to deal with social emotional skills. And many of our districts across the state do not have guidelines in place, do not know the best practices. Our programs are valuable, and I see this as a mechanism for providing that, so with the local control, we can have their guidelines to choose for their own and know that they come from best practices. So, those are very helpful comments, and the representative of
there. One of the things I'm concerned about with all of those, especially the not being in the classroom and the kind of problems that hopefully not being in the classroom here, I appreciate what you said to me up there at the user about the importance for teaching cognitivism and different ability to our students. Certainly, because, like I said before, our mandate, there is not this, what the standards we are going to be required to be teaching are. And the goal of those standards that we created are to be flexible for the school districts at the local level. We are telling us that we need these mandate standards in place for when they go to expand the curriculum that they use or provide new professional development for their educators and faculty to have in place. We have to get the school district to a letter of support asking for this, and they currently are implementing the CAFL program in their school district. And we want to change that in the future so we would like to establish what this is for. That's what that letter says. And I couldn't agree more than getting kids and students back into school. It is going to be the most important thing that we can possibly do. And as we all know, the students spend possibly the majority of their day at school interacting with other students in those settings, and building trust and interact in those group environments, and complicated social environments for many other students is going to be critical, especially after a year away from many of them. And having them, their teachers have better professional development, teachers know what can be implemented at their own local community based on their needs well within the general framework from which they're derived, but it's going to make those interactions healthier and better and more productive because we can go home and work with our parents as students and then, you know, have that interaction, but those interactions are more about with a group of other students and everybody else in society that they need to be able to be prepared for. Like I said, this is not including a top-down directive. This is guidelines that would be an option for districts to use and look at. That is a bottom-up approach because that allows the most local control and most flexibility at the local level to be able to implement what they want. For example, the program when we met a few weeks ago, it was two or three of them, and I absolutely agree it's difficult to teach 40, 50, 60-year-olds in the workforce new skills and have that inclusion shift in a workplace quickly overnight. It's hard to understand the new world that we're working in when our boss is maybe not to act this way now. So, those skills that you talked about, how to overcome some of the small obstacles that you said were kind of left out, so difficult to overcome sometimes, after a meal, and then meeting about new school or something like that. You need to start teaching them earlier and putting emphasis on that earlier in schools. And so, helping the school districts know how to guide our educators in teaching our students those skills that we're saying are hard to learn at a degree age is the best way to make sure it's not a fast shift. Sure, when they have the skills when they get to that workplace, thinking about an employer or saying they need teaching it from a young age is going to be the most effective way to go. The younger you are, the more you bring the education that you first get in perhaps new stuff. I'll go ahead and cut my comments off there. Let's see where I go. So thanks everybody for your comments today and your support. I look forward to working with you on this legislation in the future. Thank you.
Johnson is threatened or appearing abroad for the Savannah-Springsboro School District. Alex Wilson is for Galveston School District. And Seth McManus with Alaska Gateway School District. You also consider reference to the high school at 19 and